For those of us living in a northern climate who want to expand our backpacking season, but don't have the interest in investing in the equipment or the desire to sleep out in the snow or in sub-zero temperatures, are there places we could backpack? Today we have a renowned long-distance hiker, Triple Crowner, Snorkel Liz Thomas. Liz, welcome back to the podcast. Welcome back to Papa Air Hikes.
Thank you so much for having me back on the show.
It's been a while, but I did come across one of your articles on a recent hike you took, the San Diego Trans County Trail. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, this trail is about a week long, 150 mile or so long distance trail that goes from the Salton Sea, so the easternmost boundary of San Diego County, pretty much the desert, all the way to the Pacific Ocean. And along the way, it crosses the Pacific Crest Trail. It goes up into some sort of, you know, traditionally pine forest, what you would think of when you think of sort of PCT style. And then, you know, at the very end, you get almost an urban hike through northern San Diego to stick your feet in the Pacific Ocean.
And that's what I thought was kind of cool about this. And it's, we don't have a lot of east-west trails, it seems like, right? It seems like the majority of trails are north-south. And this one takes you through very interestingly diversified terrain, right? Like you said, you're starting out at the Salton Sea and you're finishing in San Diego, walking through the city. And that just, to me, sounded like a lot of fun, right?
Yeah, this trail actually was originally called the Sea to Sea Trail because it goes to from the Salton Sea to the Pacific Ocean. Of course, Andrew Skirka took that name for his Atlantic to Pacific route. And the Trans County Trail in many ways really captures all the cool things that San Diego has to offer. I mean, it's the second most botanically diverse county in the country, I want to say. Wow. So, I mean, you're going through desert, you're going through these sort of pine forests. It packs a big punch for a trail of this length.
And you mentioned in your article the diverse landscape along the way. Were there any scenic spots in particular that jumped out at you that you were like wowed by?
Oh man, there are so many on that hike, just because there's so many different ecosystems. I mean, you're in Anza Borrego State Park, which is maybe the largest or possibly the second largest state park in the lower 48. And I mean, you're going through these sort of like badlands, hoodoos, almost like mud cave, not quite a cave, but these like ravines where, I mean, it looks like something out of Star Wars. And then, you know, you're up in the mountains, you know, and it feels like, I don't know, maybe saying it's like Colorado is a bit of exaggeration, but, you know, pine forests with lakes, you know, it's, and everything in between. You got the barrel cactus, you got the ocean, you got wetlands. It's really cool.
And I have to tell you, Snorkel, that's something that really appeals to me. I live in Northeast. Most of my hiking has been in the Northeast. And as you know, as a Triple Crowner, it's not very diverse up here. It's beautiful, but you know, you'll get to your mountaintops when you're in the Green Mountains or the Whites or the Adirondacks. But 2 years ago, I was out and I hiked the Tahoe Rim Trail. And I just was like, I've got to do more of this. There's just, you know, so much more beauty out there. And one of the things that stood out to me with that trail was that on one side of the lake, you've got a different type of ecosystem or environment than you have on the other side. When you, from the Nevada side to the California side, there's a big difference. And it sounds like this trail offers hikers that in that relatively short distance for a long distance hike, you get to experience quite a bit.
Yeah, I would say that's one of the best parts of this trail, and that it can be hiked in the winter too.
Yeah. Well, that was the first thing I thought. I was like, you know, a lot of us that are stuck up here in the snowy conditions, not exactly the best time to go out and start a long distance hike, although there are people who do, but I think most of us prefer to have more moderate temperatures. I thought, yeah, that's something. And I'm going to guess the best time to do a hike like that would be in the winter.
Yeah. I mean, there are some people who push it a little bit in the spring, but, I've hiked it December, January, I've hiked it twice. And both times there are sections that get pretty toasty even at those times of year.
What inspired you to embark on the on this trail, to take on this trail?
I think, the first time I hiked it, it was sort of a word of mouth thing among long distance hikers. As you can imagine, a lot of PCT hikers, after they finish the trail, say, "Where do I want to move?" San Diego, great hiking, kind of year round, good temperatures for getting outdoors. And this sort of hiking community is the one who really got me interested. And being able to do it in the winter is obviously a big benefit as well.
San Diego, I know I have some friends that live there. I've talked to people who have lived in San Diego, and something I've never heard people say is San Diego sucks. It's, you know, it's, I want to get out of here, right? Yeah, it's supposed to be beautiful.
Yeah, and the really wild thing about San Diego is it has so much public land that's hikeable. It's you think of it as like the whole county is a city, and it's like that's not the case at all. There are all sorts of trails for most of the space of the city, or of the county rather.
Snorkel, you've done, as I said, you're a triple crowner. You've hiked through, well, all every terrain I think that this continent has to offer. But was there anything you did to prepare yourself physically and mentally for this trip?
I think one thing to, I guess it's not, I don't know if it's physically or mentally, but this is a water, a trail that I cached water along through the desert. So I drove out the day before with some jugs of water and put them at places where the trail crossed the road. And that just, through the desert, there's not that many water sources. So that was something that I did to kind of feel a little bit better going through those sections.
Yeah, I think I would guess there'd be some mental preparation into that. That I've got a number one, probably carrying more water than you're used to carrying with you. And you're caching water, and I think you got to say, I hope it's there. I
Yeah,
hope somebody
definitely
doesn't
cash
take
it.
it.
We had the GPS point, kind of hide it behind a bush. And then, of course, with any sort of water cache, making sure to pack out all the trash, all of the empty bottles, before as I head out.
Your article touches upon the historical and cultural aspects of the trail. Can you delve deeper into some of the historical significance and cultural landmarks you encountered during your journey?
So many of the areas along the trail are the ancestral homes of the Kumeyaay people, who are still very active in the area. There's lots of different cultural and community events that happen, especially up in the area, kind of closer to Lake Cuyamaca area. Where there's more water, as you can imagine, for such a dry climate, areas that are near water have had significance to humans for a very long time.
We'll be back after a quick break.
You ever think about what might be in the water you're drinking every time you fill up your water bottles while you're in the outdoors? I try not to, and I really don't because I use Sawyer water filters. Sawyer filter technology, because of their high standards, every filter is individually tested 3 times through the process. I've been using the permethrin product for years now to protect me from, well, quite frankly, ticks, and the picaridin to keep the flies at bay. Don't let bad water, insects, or a tick bite cut your trip short or even ruin it. Use Sawyer products. Go to your local outdoor retailer and ask for Sawyer products, whether it's a water filter, insect repellent, they're likely to have it. You can also go to Sawyer's website and read more about these incredible high quality products that they offer those of us who enjoy the outdoors.
A lot of trails, because they are remote, have their different logistic challenges. One you mentioned, well, just the idea of how do I get my water cache out there? But somebody traveling from another part of the country, can you tell us about some of the challenges that you have with logistics, like first with getting to the trail?
So the sort of start point at the Salton Sea, where the trail starts, is not the most trafficked area. It's kind of this sort of town that there were high hopes that this was going to become a resort town on the Salton Sea that never really ended up panning out. There's still some homes there, but as far as public transit there, some of your best bets are maybe flying into something like Palm Springs, getting a bus out to Indio, and then maybe having to ride share out to the starting point. It is a paved road though, so it's got that going for it. And at the end logistics, once you get to the ocean, there's literally a bus stop right there that'll take you to San Diego. The airport in San Diego is very convenient, so getting home is easy, but getting out to the beginning can be a little rough. And that's another place where I would recommend becoming part of this Facebook page of Trans County Hikers. They've got a great Trail Angel network set up where they might be able to help you out.
We'll try to put a link into the description of this episode for people to check that out. The Salton Sea, you mentioned that. That's of historical significance in itself. I watched an incredible documentary a few years back about how, yes, they tried to settle it and things kind of went sideways there. And now it's just kind of like a big wasteland, I guess, out in the desert.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big lake. I was actually out there hiking 2 days ago by the Salton Sea. It's really cool to see from the mountaintops, just this big lake. But as you walk to the edge to start your hike, maybe even dip your toe in it, I mean, there's fish skeletons because the water is so salty. I mean, it is a surreal way to start a hike.
More logistical things here. This isn't a trail. It has a big trail network where you can just go online and buy a map, or has an established organization. How was that? How was navigating this trip?
Navigating the trip, once again, that Facebook page is really helpful to figure out where the trail goes. There's alternates. It doesn't have an official route. And this is one of those routes really, where you have to be really on top of your navigation skills. There's literally sections where you're pushing your way through bushes. There's no marked trail. There's maybe one or two. I can think of two signs that say Trans County Trail in it on the entire length of the trail. And so this is one that you're going to want some experience on some other trails. You're going to want to you know how to use a map and compass and be really self-sufficient for this trail.
Now, this is a trail that also you're, it's not a marked trail for the most part. So you also have the challenge of you don't want to be trespassing on people's property either. So you have to kind of, I guess, you got to be pretty good at reading a map too, so you can have an understanding of what's the private and what's public property.
Right. Yeah, there's some sections where having that map and compass skills, using GPS and making sure you're on the right side of the private property. I paid for the extra layers for my GPS apps to make sure that I would stay on public land going through this trail. So that's something to keep in mind, and always keep your eyes out for posted no trespassing signs. Don't just rely on your GPS. Use all of your senses to make sure you're on the right route.
I think that's important. I do some bushwhacking up here in the Catskills and the Adirondacks. And you have to respect the private property, because you know what? If a couple of people start, all it takes is one bad hike or somebody to go out there, make a mess, do something, I'll just say stupid. And you know what? The next thing you know, it's fenced off, or there's it can close down an area. And we really have to respect private property as much as we can.
Exactly. Yeah, you get it. It's really important because we want this route to flourish. We want maybe one day the Forest Service to maybe build some single track on the public land side of it. So making sure the locals are happy is really important.
Because we have that up here in New York with the Finger Lakes Trail. Actually, they have some easements to go through private property. But every once in a while, somebody's just not very considerate of that private land. And the next thing you know, there's a notice sent out to everybody. You can no longer hike through this area anymore. There's a big road walk around. We just added 20 miles to your hike because somebody left a mess on this person's property.
Yeah, we really need to respect leave no trace and just be smart going through these areas that are close by the private land.
Now, you talked about what you're doing is pretty much bushwhacking. You're going through this brush and everything. And being a Northeast guy, I'm thinking desert, what's going through my mind are rattlesnakes. So I want to talk about safety concerns there.
I have not seen a rattlesnake on this trail. I think partially maybe because I'm going out in December and January. That probably is when they're cold and less active underground, under rocks. The bushwhacking section, I mean, the bushes that you're going through are manzanita that's taller than I am. in a full body sport as bushwhacking on the East Coast is as well. I think, I wouldn't be quoted on this, but I think some of this rocky terrain maybe is not the best habitat for rattlesnakes. So that wasn't my biggest concern going through these areas. It was more like losing my sunglasses or tearing up my pack or tearing open my shirt, sort of thing.
Yeah, I guess that's comes down to studying the terrain you'll be hiking through and knowing the well, all dangers, but animal dangers too, right? You have to understand, is this a terrain that's unlikely to see a rattlesnake? Not that you should completely let your guard down, but like you said, where you were going through, it wasn't likely. Yeah. Were there other safety concerns? Because you were going through such a remote area. Were there other safety concerns, and how did you address those?
Yeah, I would say, like as you get closer to San Diego, the trail becomes more urban. They have an amazing set of urban trail system. And one of the safety concerns is really just making sure that you're able to, within those last 30 miles, if you have to end the night somewhere there, find a good spot to get your rideshare to take you to a hotel or have a friend pick you up. Because you don't want to be camping along those areas, both because it's not respectful, it's not legal, but also some of those areas might get a little dicey if you were to be camping out, just because they're closer to the city. So I would say that's probably another safety concern. The days are shorter usually, as everywhere, the days are shorter during the peak season for this, the winter. So just making sure you don't get benighted somewhere or stuck in the middle of a bushwhack at night. That's a safety concern as well.
Well, like I just brought up about knowing your environment when you're hiking about animals and such, you're in a city, and cities are cities. It's for forever.
Yep.
Where no matter what city you're in, there's areas you just need to know. You need to have a heightened, I guess, awareness of what could go wrong.
Right. And luckily once you're in that city section, you usually have that reception. It's easy to get a ride to come pick you up. And I mean, if you're that close to a city, you're going to want to go to a restaurant anyway. Your day 6, day 10 of your trip. You're the close enough to town that you're going to want to take advantage of some of the resources.
You're going to be ready for a hotel, a hot shower, and a nice warm meal, right?
Right,
Think
exactly.
about camping along this route. How was that? Because I think it's pretty safe to say you don't exactly have designated campgrounds, campsites along the way. How was that for you?
Yeah, it's all public land for the most part until the last day and a half, and that's where you can get a hotel room pretty easily with a ride share. Yeah, I would say it's usually pretty easy to find a good flat spot to camp, but that's another thing where sometimes there's some road walks, so you just want to make sure that you plan where you're going to camp out so that you're not stuck in the middle of road walk and looking left and right and trying to figure out what to do. Just the same on a lot of routes as well.
This doesn't sound like it would be a very good first through hike for somebody, because you need a pretty good aptitude when it comes to navigation skills, as well as everything else that goes along with that.
Yeah, I would recommend that this not be a first through hike, and that even if you have done a through hike, that you get some skills in map and compass, be familiar with how to hike in different sorts of climates, especially the desert, which is kind of a thing on itself. If you've hiked the AT, you might want to practice a little bit with, you might want to cache water and practice a little bit with figuring out how much water you need in a drier climate or a hotter climate. To get your miles in, because it's a different game than the AT. Yeah, that would be sort of my recommendation.
It's something I look for when I'm planning a trip, or bailout points. If
Yeah.
something should go wrong, I get hurt, get sick, whatever. Were those there on this trip?
Yeah. So maybe a day or two days in, day and a half, 2 days in, there's a town that, I think you can actually take a bus that'll help bail you out, and it's also a place where you can resupply. And there's a few other sort of bailout points that are similar to that. It's near the trail town of Julian, which is a famous PCT trail town. Yeah, there's a couple other places to resupply as well. And also, I would say if the bushwhacking section is not your cup of tea, One of the great joys is that there's a trailhead. You get to a trailhead, and where you get reception, it's pretty much in the middle of a neighborhood. You can have your rideshare pick you up. You could totally skip that bushwhacking, close to private property, tricky navigation section, and just get on the nice urban trail all the way to the ocean for 40 miles or something. So there's a lot of ways to do this. So even if you're not 100% sure about your skills or are a little nervous about hiking near private property, you can still have a great trip out there.
There's no rules. It's not like I guess it's not like the established trails where it starts here, ends here. So yeah, if you want to, I feel a little uneasy about bushwhacking, you could say, all right, I'm going to just, there's opportunities to skip around certain sections.
Yeah, for sure. And even if you want to do that section, I would say, much like on the AT, this is one of those trailheads where you can get a pizza delivered, which is,
Oh,
yes,
I'm liking it even
amazing.
more now. On talking about food here, how about resupply? What was your approach with that? Did you prepare food in advance, or did you resupply as you went along?
I resupplied as I went along. It goes past great little towns every few days, so it's pretty easy. One of the towns is a little expensive. It's a little resort town, but you only need to get a couple days until you're start hitting the metropolis of San Diego, and then I twice the trail goes very close to a Costco, and both times I've hiked, I said I'm gonna go to Costco while I'm on this trail, and it just hasn't worked out timing wise for when I get there and when Costco opens or closes. But yeah, once you're in the city, the world's your oyster when it comes to food.
Yeah, you're someone you like to kind of just do your resupply as you go along, right? Go into town, hit supermarkets or whatever's available and pick up your food.
Yeah, on a longer trail, I probably would send a box, but for a shorter trail where the resupplies are maybe 2 days, or 3 days in between, the sort of the cost of is this worth sending a box? Especially, like San Diego grocery stores or, supermarkets with lots of options. So, I think if you were worried about making sure that you got food that, if you have dietary restrictions, you could probably carry a longer distance as well. And then just once you get to San Diego, you find a health food store or whatever that can help address what you need.
If you can resupply that frequently, I'm thinking, I don't want to carry 5 days worth of food. If I
Yeah,
can just
that's
go into
true.
town
Yes.
every couple of days, and who wants to be
Yeah.
bothered with working around the post office? I would just say, all right, every couple of days, I'll just go in and grab some stuff from a convenience store, supermarket, whatever, and only be carrying a couple of days worth of food at a time.
Yeah, I like that as well.
For somebody who's considering hiking this trail, what advice would you give them for preparing?
Yeah, I would say, the first stop well, I would recommend reading my article on Tree
Yeah.
Line Review. Again, it was a sort of a big overview of the trail. I would definitely recommend joining that Facebook group. And to the extent that you can go out, maybe rent a car and cache your water ahead of time, definitely recommend caching water through that desert section. Read up on Leave No Trace on how to do de desert water caches, but I think that's really a nice thing. Yeah, and I would just make sure that you're sort of bushwhacking and your maps are good around those sorts of areas.
Because unlike other trails, and I'll use the AT and the Long Trail because those are the ones I'm most familiar with, you're not just going to keep following blazes and every
Right,
5 days being,
right.
and know that, okay, every couple of days there's going to be a road crossing.
Right. Yeah. It's you'll get to an intersection, it'll be unmarked, and you're gonna have to look at that map and figure, do I go right or left? And then you get to a section where the trail disappears and there's nothing but bushes. So you just go into the bushes and hope that you end up where you want to be. So making sure you feel confident doing that, I think is really important.
For your article, Liz, we'll put a link to it in this in the description for the episode. Just let us know how we can find that. Where can we go to find your article?
Yeah, that is on treelinereview.com. If you go into the where to go sections, there's all sorts of different trail backpacking guides, hiking guides, and I believe this is under the through hikes for working people section.
Okay. And it is a great article. As with everything you write, because I read a lot of your articles, Liz, it's fantastic. It's I'd tell everybody, look through that. There are, I look through it because I'm always looking for my next trip.
Right,
It's
yeah.
a lot of great ideas. If you're somebody out there looking for what you want to do in the spring, summer, any time of the year, go through and look at those articles.
Thank you. Yeah, that's kind of our hope, is that that will become the place that people go when they're trying to figure out their next trail.
Yeah, because you really are getting very good information. Well, also wanted to ask you this about the road walking. And again, we talked, it's not, an official mapped out trail, but did you find there to be an excessive amount of road walking?
Yeah, I mean, excessive is kind of, it's relative to your experience. So I've thru hiked the Pacific Northwest Trail. A lot of people consider that to be excessive road walking. I've thru hiked the CDT. I would say, the roads that it's on for the most part are pretty low trafficked roads. It's kind of, anytime there is a road, it's usually because that's the way to get there that's on a public right of way. And sort of my hope, and I mean, some people might disagree with this, but my hope is that one day there would be single track built that would help connect those on public land. Yeah.
Snorkel, you've probably heard this plenty of times or seen the reaction when you talk about road walking. Yeah, the roll, road walking, the rolling of the ice and everything. And what advice would you have just in general for hikers, when they come across those, sometimes it could be as many as 10 or more miles you're road walking. Just, how to deal with that. Because I know it myself. It's when I think of road walking, if it's a summer, oh, my feet are going to burn up, and I just kind of get a little bit of a negative attitude towards it. But how do you cope with it? Maybe that's the best way to ask this.
Yeah, I mean, it might be a bit of an anomaly because I also do urban through hiking, which, I think sort of that same philosophy comes into it, being like, okay, I'm not on a trail, but I'm still seeing beautiful new places. It always helps when you're with friends because, if you think about being a kid or a teenager, when I was that age, I would just walk the streets and laugh with my friends, and it didn't matter where we were. We were just having so much fun. So, kind of taking that same playful nature of like, it doesn't matter walking a road, I'm with my friends. I think that goes a long way. And if nothing else, listening to tunes or podcasts or books, that's another thing. Just make sure if you're on a road that you have some way to just do one earbud or have some situational awareness buds just to make sure if there were a car that came, you could hear it coming.
Because I, like I said, I've been that person. I like the Finger Lakes Trail. I'm trying to finish up. I'm down to 70 miles. A lot of road walking, but the truth is, and I'm like you. As a kid, I was a walker. And I grew up outside in New York City. I walked everywhere. I
Yeah.
love walking, right? And the truth is, when I've road walked, at the end of the day, I always think, "Wow, that's kind of cool." I mean, a story I've told people on a podcast is 2021. Yeah, we're still coming out of pandemic. Getting around was tough still. So I went up and did a section of the AT that I really liked up in Massachusetts and into Vermont. And then I decided I'm going to road walk into Bennington, Vermont and spend the night. That was where I was going to finish up. And I had a woman give me fresh organic blueberries, literally just had just picked them, right? And I just walked over, I'm looking at the sign. She starts talking to me. Oh yeah. She was familiar with the trail. It wasn't that far off the trail. And she goes, "Here, have some." And I was going to pay her. She goes, "No, you enjoy them." And yeah, so it's like little things like that too, and some of the interesting people and things you see when you get out and road walking. It doesn't all have to be trees and rocks and mountains.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
So snorkels, if somebody wants to follow you, how'd we go about doing that?
Yeah, they can follow me at Instagram at Liz Thomas Hiking. I also run the social media over at Treeline Review, so that's at Treeline Review, and I'm very active posting new articles every day by myself and by other long distance hikers and people who do other sports like skiing and mountain biking and paddling over at treelinereview.com as well.
Well, Liz Snorkel Thomas, I want to thank you again for being generous enough to give up your time and talk about this very interesting trail that I hope everybody checks out, and I hope everybody reads your article.
Thank you so much. Yeah, this is a great trail, and I think getting it on more people's radar can really help, and try to get some of that single track built, and really build this up to the trail that I mean, the quality of trail that it deserves to be.
Right, because there's strength in numbers. I talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes you'll hear people complain. All the more and more people are going to the outdoors, and I just see it a different way. I see it that that's more voices. That's more voices saying, "Protect this, build it." Right.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Liz, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Thanks so much for having me on, Papa Bear.
Thanks for listening. If you haven't done so yet, go to our website, papabearhikes.com. Listen to past episodes. Check us out on social media. Go to our YouTube channel, Martin Outside. All those links are there. In addition to that, you can buy our book or see what you're missing out on if you're not a Patreon member yet. Remember to get outside, have fun, and be safe. This episode of Papa Bear Hikes has been brought to you by Avalon Publicity. Avalon Publicity, increasing the digital footprint of content creators and skilled professionals via website development and social media services. For more information about Avalon Publicity, go to their website, avalonbusiness.org. That's avalonbusiness.org.